Today, the end of evacuations from Kabul and the people who didn't make it out. Last month, after 20 years of Western military involvement, the Afghan government collapsed within days. For thousands of people in Afghanistan, it was time to run.
Desperation on a scale not seen in decades. Thousands have arrived in Kabul in the past few days.
Kabul fell quicker than anyone expected. Interpreters, journalists, foreign citizens, Afghans who supported Western militaries, all were suddenly stranded with just one escape route: the airport.
This video, shared widely on social media, shows people chasing a U.S. military plane down the runway, clinging to its undercarriage even as it took off. Several have been reported killed in the airport chaos.
It might be the biggest military airlift in history. The U.S., U.K. and other governments rushing to evacuate tens of thousands of people before a Taliban deadline yesterday.
Thousands upon thousands trapped. Behind them, the Taliban in front, soldiers having to decide who stays and who goes.
It was chaotic and bloody. The target for an ISIS suicide bomb last Thursday, one of the deadliest single attacks of the two-decade war.
The chaos of the last week in Kabul turned to carnage,
with the US launching airstrikes in the days that followed. On Saturday night, the last RAF evacuation flight left Kabul, the end of the UK's deployment to Afghanistan. Left behind, over 1,100 British citizens, some of around 9,000 people, according to one estimate, still in Kabul and who were eligible to come to the UK.
So how long have you been stuck here?
2 weeks.
2 weeks? Are you with the same thing as well?
Yes, my friend, I'm a British citizen. I've been stuck in Afghanistan. I couldn't get out of the country. Boris Johnson, please, you need to help us.
From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, what next for British citizens stranded in Kabul? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Michael, now, yeah.
This is Ahmad. He's a British citizen. We're not using his real name.
Excellent, excellent.
He was born in Afghanistan, but fled in 2001 after the US invasion. He lives in Glasgow now, which you can probably hear in his voice.
I can't make it, but I was looking forward, like...
The last British troops left Kabul on Monday, but Ahmad is still there.
To send us a safe location so they can pick us up.
Was there a particular moment when you realised the Taliban had taken over and that you were just stuck?
Well, when they start heading like towards the capital, everybody was worried. Everybody was like, even me and my kids, everyone, like, we were just worried about our lives. I thought, well, it's going to be the same again, like in the past, like in 1995. So it's going to be like the same Taliban as it was, but this time they were not like the same as they were. So this time they were a wee bit okay, but still nobody knows what's their agenda, what's their program, what they are going to do.
I spoke to Ahmad on a dodgy connection over WhatsApp. He's holed up in a friend's house in Kabul with his wife and children, the youngest less than 2 weeks old. That birth was the reason he flew back to Afghanistan. It's where his family is. He expected, if anything went wrong, that he'd have time to get out. And when the Afghan government folded, Ahmad, his wife, and his kids, they joined those crowds outside Kabul airport.
The youngest kid was like 6 to 7 days old. So it was all like a crowd of kids I was carrying. And so it was very difficult the minute I seen the airport. It was like heavy crowd. And the minute I see the crowd, because it got like 6 to 7 different gates in Kabul airport. So I did try to search every gate, but it was crowded there. Then I realized, I says, no, I'm carrying kids. I cannot get into this tsunami of this big crowd, because I'm gonna lose babies in this crowd, because it was pushing and everything. Some of the Taliban forces took over, like on some gates, their presence was there, and they were just firing shots in the air, so just to disperse all the citizens and all the people, keep away from them. So my kids were just really scared of these shots as well.
Ahmed arrived at the airport armed with an email from the Foreign Office. Do not tell anyone else where you are going, it said. Expect a long wait. He also had his British passport, but he couldn't find anyone interested in seeing it, except the Taliban.
I was actually trying to hide my paperwork from the Taliban, because some of the people, they did show, like, we had Italian nationals, American nationals who were holding green cards and passports, and from Belgium, some people, Afghan Belgium. So the Taliban just were holding their passports, and they were begging, the citizens were begging, like, to give return our paper back. So when I realized, I said, no, it's not very secure to show your British citizenship to the Taliban. I was holding an Afghan national identity card, because I didn't trust them from the first day.
And Ahmed, I was reading that people were actually having to go through this sewage canal around the airport to try to find some way to the gates. Is that something that you had to do?
Well, that was a Thursday afternoon when we made our way to that sewage waterway with my kids. I just put them few meters away from that crowd. Then I was thinking of that sewage water. I says, now my kids is going to walk in this sewage water. It was it was nearly 2 feet to 2 feet of that sewage dirty water. And I was just thinking for 5 minutes, I was just stuck in thinking, now we are going to walk into this and we are going to make it in the middle of that crowd just to show my passport to these British forces so they can just rescue from here. And then I just got ready to make my way back to home. I says, no, I give up. I cannot put my children's lives in risk.
Ahmed's decision last Thursday not to wade into the sewage with his kids was a lucky one. In the crowd that day was a suicide bomber from an Islamic State affiliate. 5 minutes after Ahmed left, the bomb went off.
There has been a suicide bombing at Kabul Airport in Afghanistan, where crowds were gathered in the hope of getting onto one of the last flights to escape Taliban rule.
5 minutes after and that blast happened, everybody was just running here and there, but thanks God we were just safe at that point. The distance between me and the bomb blast were just like not very far, but I was just away from the heavy crowd, so I had to hold my kids and on the side of the street to say, just in case they just go over on it.
There'd been warnings for a week of an attack like this, a last strike against Western troops set to leave within days. Another blow to many Afghans' last hope of leaving this chaos behind.
So I've just seen dead bodies they were carrying, and later on that night I've seen videos of people just being lying on that sewage, dirty water. So it was an unforgettable moment for my kids. They were scared all night. They couldn't go to sleep. I had to hug them. I have to make them go to sleep. I mean, their sleep was not normal and that night. So it was very heartbreaking. That night I was just awake till the morning, and I was wondering if I was staying there for five more minutes, so I wouldn't be here. My kids wouldn't be here. They would have been wounded. They would have been killed. So I've emailed my MP, which is from Northwest Glasgow in Scotland, as I lived there for over 17 years. So they did reply as an automated message. We are just now waiting for someone to give a wee shout or just give a wee instruction, but nothing is happening.
Some people are trying to escape overland to one of Afghanistan's neighbours, like Pakistan. But that's not an option for Ahmed. His wife and kids aren't British citizens. They don't even have Afghan passports. Right now, they've no legal way to cross borders.
So I don't know what's the future of our kids, wife and me are going to be here, because we are stuck.
How did it feel on Saturday as you watched that last British flight take off, and you weren't on it, your family wasn't on it? What was it like to see it leave Kabul?
To be honest, Michael, there was tears in my eyes. It says, no, it shouldn't be happening, and why the Taliban is why the Taliban does not let us in, because this contract or this commitment was like till the 31st of August, and why did the British forces left before the deadline? So I mean, I was so emotional at that point when I heard the news, and they says, okay, the last plane took off like at 25 past 9 yesterday on Saturday PM. So I was really heartbroken, and there was tears in my eyes. I says, no, we were just being left. Nobody, they were just careless. They never cared about us.
Amelia Gentleman, you've been reporting on the struggle of British citizens stuck in Kabul, trying to get home as the deadline for the UK's presence at the airport has come and then gone on Saturday night. You've been talking to lots of people in Ahmad's situation, because he isn't alone, is he?
Judging by the people who I've spoken to, there have certainly been at least 40 or 50 people waiting for days outside the airport gates.
It's just terrifying to see those scenes. What have they told you about what it's like in that scrum of people?
Well, I think it's been an absolutely terrifying experience. A lot of the people who I've spoken to said that about a week ago, they began to get emails from the Foreign Office, from British officials, telling them to go to the Baron Hotel processing centre just outside Kabul airport. And I've seen some of the emails, and they say things like, travel there immediately, don't tell anybody else where you're going. So these individuals, and often their families, made their way to the airport hoping to fairly swiftly be moved onto an evacuation flight. But the reality was, as we've all seen now from the footage outside the airport, there were lots of other people just hoping to get out of Afghanistan fast. But some of those people had documents, had British passports, others had had invitations. And these people said it was just impossible even to let guards at the gate know that they had arrived for their appointment. I've spoken to people who waited night and day for 3 or 4 nights last week.
Well, there's a real sense now that people are beginning to expect that this whole airlift is coming to an end, and they're really, really desperate. I mean, they're in a sewage canal. They're trying to show their paperwork, trying to show that they perhaps should be looked at. It's really desperate.
That it was a scene of total chaos.
So the UK government had this process of emailing people, asking them to come to the airport in time for their evacuation. Where did it go wrong? What was it that they did not foresee when they were actually planning this operation?
I think originally officials perhaps anticipated that it would be possible for British nationals to travel easily to the airport and enter this hotel where a processing centre had been set up. But as soon as it became clear that there was a very short window of time remaining before evacuation flights ended, there was a surge of thousands of people. Some of the people I've spoken to who spent days standing in those crowds, waving their red British passports and shouting towards the guards, we're British, we're British, say it would have been better if officials had come out and tried to get the British citizens to be in one queue, or somehow come out and try to gather those people up and help shepherd them into the airport. But they said that process didn't happen.
And so British citizens were getting these emails saying, go to the airport in Kabul, arriving there to find huge scrums of people unable to get anywhere close to someone who could help them. Did the UK government at that point pivot and find some other way to organise British nationals trying to get out of Kabul?
Well, I've spoken to a couple of people who have very young children who were told by Foreign Office officials that it would be too dangerous for them to go with their babies to the airport, and were promised that they would be sent transportation of some sort to get them to the airport. One person actually managed to get on a bus, but that evacuation was stopped because of the explosion on Thursday. Another person was told on Friday to stand by for details that were going to be sent to him imminently of another bus transportation to the airport. And he said that he waited 24 hours later, he still hadn't heard anything. And quite a few people who actually were receiving regular updates from British officials say that these ended pretty abruptly on Friday, so that most people who are still there now say that they just feel totally in the dark. They haven't been told what to do next. They are uncertain about whether or not they should be making plans to try to go to Pakistan or Tajikistan, or whether or not they should still be waiting in Kabul in the hope that there may be some form of assistance.
This is clearly a very difficult thing that the Foreign Office is being asked to execute here. But on the other hand, after 20 years in Afghanistan, it's been clear that the UK is going to need to pull people out quickly for months. And yet the plan has left hundreds, maybe thousands of people behind. What has the Foreign Office actually said about this airlift? How do they see it?
Well, they say that it has been a hugely successful evacuation mission, that they've taken 15,000 people out of Afghanistan. And I think it's true that on the one hand, it has been an enormous evacuation. There weren't plans in place, and perhaps that's part of the problem. But this was an operation that was mobilized pretty quickly. On the one hand, I suppose you really need to give credit to all of the Foreign Office officials who were inside those processing centers by the airport, working through hundreds of applications an hour and getting a large number of people on flights. And certainly those British citizens who were able to talk to Foreign Office officials have said until Friday, the people they were talking to were very, very compassionate and sympathetic, wanting to help them. The problem is there are many, many more people still waiting for help. And we've heard, I think, one British minister saying that there's around 1,100 people still needing to be removed from Afghanistan. But I think that that figure now looks like a significant underestimate of the true number of people, as well as the British nationals who are still stuck in Kabul and presumably elsewhere in Afghanistan. There are also the 200 or so British embassy workers whose stories we've told in The Guardian, who, after a U-turn by the government, have now been promised assistance in getting to safety in the UK, but who haven't actually received any practical help to date. So it's a really difficult picture. The Foreign Office wants to promote this as a triumphant evacuation. But I think we're going to be hearing many, many more of these stories in the weeks and months to come.
Ahmed's story begins 20 years ago. For him, trying to escape the Taliban comes with a sense of déjà vu. Back in 2001, he was living in Nangarhar province when the US-led invasion started. He worried he might be killed in an airstrike. His parents worried that, as a young man, the Taliban might force Ahmed to fight.
Then I just decided before they just take me and just keep me alive for their own selves, for their own benefits, I left the country. I just moved to Pakistan, Iran, and all these countries illegally, and I just made it to the UK like on the 12th of February 2003.
12 February 2003. He knows the exact date he arrived in the UK.
It was a new life date, so something like a birthday. Nobody's gonna forget about the birthday. So it was a new life for me. So it's always there in my mind. You know, I'll never forget about that.
His path to UK citizenship wasn't easy. After 5 years in Manchester and London and then Scotland, Ahmed's request for protection was denied. The UK government said Afghanistan was now a safe country. So he tried to go to Italy, and they deported him back to the UK. He spent years trying to regularise himself, jumping from one temporary visa to another. In the meantime, trying to build a new life.
I just moved to Scotland like in mid-2005. Since then, I've just been living in Scotland because of the people, you know. I've got so many friends there. I've got like so many colleagues. We used to play football and all that. So I used to work as a volunteer in Positive Housing and Action for a wee while. We used to translate like some people who needed shelter. So I was just volunteer because I was not allowed to work at that point. So I'd say as well, if I'm not allowed to work, I can help someone.
Last year, Ahmed became a citizen. Even with everything going on in Afghanistan, the impending withdrawal of coalition troops, he felt safe to visit his wife and kids there. He had a British passport now, and with it, some promise of help if things went wrong. What are your immediate concerns for your family, like right now, this week?
I'm just very concerned all about my family and my kids, my surrounding, the safety of, you know, the situation has been like this. Like, I mean, I'm really concerned. I mean, I don't feel really safe. The environment I got in, it was totally different. I mean, I was feeling safe. There was like flights going in and going out. Everybody was just like happy. But after 2 weeks after, so everything got worsened and changed. So now I'm stuck, stranded, and I'm feeling very sad for my kids, my family and other people. So I'm really concerned.
Coming up, for people like Ahmed, is there any way out of Kabul? So, Amelia, we've just heard about Ahmed's worries about what he should do now that his escape route via the airport is gone. What is the British government saying it will do about folks like him who can no longer be flown out of Kabul?
The Foreign Office said in a statement this week, we will continue to do all we can to deliver on our obligations to get British nationals and eligible Afghans out of the country while the security situation allows. So it's a very good commitment, but it's pretty light on detail. I think pretty much everybody who is in this situation really, really just wants to hear some clear advice about what it is they should be doing now. I think one of the real difficulties is that a lot of people who are British passport holders, who are British citizens, are in Afghanistan at the moment because they've travelled back there to try and help family members travel with them to safety. And some of those people don't have their own passports and are very uncertain about whether or not they would be able to travel to neighbouring countries.
And has the British government sought assurances from the Taliban that they can keep doing this? Because ultimately now they're the ones in control. I mean, we're sort of relying on them to help the remaining British citizens escape.
Yeah, I mean, it is just a very, very peculiar situation that we have got large numbers of UK citizens, people who are taxpayers, people who are our neighbours, stuck and at the mercy of the Taliban. And it does seem very, very worrying that we haven't been able to bring them all back to safety.
Since the UK's evacuation operation ended on Saturday night, what have you been hearing from your sources, those people who are still stuck in Kabul?
Well, I think people are very frightened. They are very worried about going out. Some of the people I've been talking to have left their homes and have gone to stay with other people because there are already reports of house-to-house searches being done by the Taliban, looking for people who may have worked with the British. So there is absolutely a feeling of great anxiety amongst those who remain in Kabul. Some of them are slightly questioning whether or not more could have been done to help them. Dominic Raab said last week that almost all single nationality UK passport holders who wanted to leave had been helped to leave. And I think that that was quite a peculiar comment because it suggests that there has been some kind of a two-tier process. Actually, a lot of the people who I've been speaking to are only British passport holders, they don't have Afghan nationality any longer, although they were born in Afghanistan. But I suppose for some people, there is a kind of slightly lingering question about whether more might have been done to help them if they'd been born in the UK. And the head of the Scottish Refugee Council said he thought that there was a Windrush parallel here. He said if these had been white men, women and children who were being shoved around in the crowds, we would have been pretty quick in getting them to safety. I'm not sure whether I think that is a fair accusation or whether, you know, the situation has just been too impossibly chaotic. But certainly, I think that is a question that some of those left behind have been wrestling with.
Ahmed, is there anything you'd like to say to the British government?
Michael, I've been in contact with my MP and... nobody is replying at the moment. I've been in contact with British High Commission. They are not responding. Every single question you ask about the guidance, they say, we are not aware, we cannot help. And you just follow the rules, which is just, we just update the travel.gov.uk, that page. That is just really no helping. We really need some physical and... practical help for someone to take us out of here, and for the British government, if they just remain the same with no answers, no help, they are just useless. And my point of view, they are useless. And in the past, they were just like not very helping. They were not listening to us. They were just putting their British citizens into that dodgy crowd, which were like bomb alerts were being issued like every day. So and after that, I'm really extremely ashamed to be a British citizen, and that's my point of view.
Ahmed in Kabul, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you very much, Michael, for having me, and I'm looking forward just to get help and just to take us out of here safely.
That's it for today. Thank you to Ahmed and Amelia, gentlemen, for speaking with us. You can follow all our coverage on stranded British citizens and what next for Afghanistan at theguardian.com. And thanks to Gareth Brown for putting us in touch with Ahmed. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Casson and Rose de Larabeyte. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. Back tomorrow.